Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to SFF Addicts, a bi-weekly panel podcast featuring authors, publishing professionals, and more, where we come together to chat about science fiction and fantasy, as well as the occasional jaunt into the wider SFF industry. I'm your host, Adrian M. Gibson, and today's episode is a special interview with SBSFC creators Duncan Swan and Hugh Howie, as well as the majority of the finalists for the first year of the competition. For those of you who haven't heard of it before, SPSFC is the self-published science fiction competition. We had Hugh and Duncan on for episode 2 of the podcast, and it was great to get a feeling for what they were planning and the year ahead. And now, 1 year later, they've just wrapped up their first competition, and the second has just kicked off. It was great to pick Duncan and Hugh's brains to see how they feel after a successful first run of SBSFC, as well as hearing book pitches from the finalists and getting everyone's take on the current state of self-pub sci-fi, the community, and advice for future entrants. If you have any feedback about this episode, questions, comments, counters, and the like, send me an email at sffaddictspod@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter at sffaddictspod. Or at Adrian M. Gibson. All right, now on to my interview with Duncan Swan, Hugh Howie, and the SPSFC 1 finalists. Here we go. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another interview here on SFF Addicts. But we're doing something a little bit special today. It's different than usual, as I will be chatting with authors Duncan Swan and Hugh Howie, founders and organizers of the self-published science fiction competition, also known as SPSFC, as well as the finalists of the competition's first year. That includes T.A. Bruno, Tom, Cameron Coral, Patrice Fitzgerald, G.M. Nair, Jack Leister, K.T. Belt, and Ben Roberts. So welcome, everybody, to the show. I really appreciate you being here. How's everyone doing?
Good.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Cool. Well, just to, you know, start off, I want to congratulate you, Duncan and Hugh, on a successful first year of SPSFC. So a little round of applause for you guys, as well as everyone who made it to the final round.
Congrats, everyone here.
You are and, our also, a shout out to Sophie Tholen, author of Iron Truth and the first place winner of SPSFC 1, who unfortunately won't be with us here today, but just a shout out to her and a congratulations as well.
So she's on her world tour being congratulated for winning.
Hell yeah. So let's dive into SPSFC. Duncan, Hugh, we spoke about it last year in episode 2 of SFF Addicts. You guys were actually my first author panel. So Thank you again for doing that. And as a refresher for new listeners, anyone who's checking in for the first time, could you give a quick introduction to the competition and why you started it?
Sure. I guess in part, the competition is a direct copy of SVFBO, which is Mark Lawrence's little brainchild, with the intent of kind of championing, finding, sourcing, and then, you know, promoting self-published, in their case, fantasy, in our case, science fiction. And I was very nascent in writing, and I came across this competition. I thought, oh, obviously something like this must exist for sci-fi, because it seems to be a great platform to find, you know, authors, reviewers, and a bit of publicity, which is what I think every new author wants. Couldn't find it. Didn't seem to exist. And then I asked Mark Lawrence if he knew of anybody who was running one. He said no. And then I basically asked a few authors who had been in the SBFBO if they knew of anybody who was running one, and they said no. And I asked a few authors who did fantasy and sci-fi if they'd be interested in one. And then we just kind of needed a pretty famous face and deep pockets and a great personality to champion it. And I managed to stalk Hugh and convince him to get on board. And from then, it's been basically like a big trial and error in terms of how do we run a competition, which we've never done before. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a, why doesn't this exist? Why do we try it and see what happens from there?
Mm-hmm. And Hugh, how did you feel getting involved in that?
Well, it's just the irony of
Duncan trying to find a competition for one of his books and then creating one. So he was immediately disqualified from entering his book. So I'm not sure what he's accomplished here at all. Whenever I talk about the competition, I'm always like, everyone should go buy Duncan's books just to, you know, like the contest itself should celebrate his works because he puts so much of his time and energy into this. It would not have happened without him. I've never seen someone who's so good at organizing and creating flowcharts and managing spreadsheets. He's an absolute genius at it. So big kudos.
That's the detail at the beginning. And then once it's up and running, everybody else just runs with it. So it's kind of like, you know, you build a test case and then it breaks and you improve it and you get everybody else's input. And that's the important thing from last year. We've had everybody else's input. Because, you know, when we started this, we had literally no idea how to run it, what was involved. And we thought, well, SPFBO does it. It must be easy. And it's not.
I couldn't even put the right name on the trophy. That's how disorganized I was.
Sorry, Sophie.
It's all good. But, you know, after the first year, now that it's done, how are you both feeling? Like, what kind of sensation is it to have gone through all the trial and error that you mentioned, Duncan, and then kind of setting yourselves up for the next year of SPSFC with all the lessons and takeaways that you learned in that first year?
I think we're still going to be learning lessons this year, but I think the lessons that we took from last year have already massively improved the interface and the format and how we relate to the authors.
Mm-hmm.
And more just trying to make it a bit more interactive. I think that's where we fell down last year, is it very much kind of reviewers were doing their own work in their silos and we weren't necessarily promoting the results or having as many discussions or kind of these open table panels, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the primary drives this year, is to just be more vocal. Because we've had a lot of return judges, which is absolutely fantastic. We've had, speaking of spreadsheets, I try to keep track of countries that are applying and how many and what the genders are, and just kind of give it a bit of an oversight of exactly who our authors are and who our judges are.
Right.
Our attention on judges has been great. We didn't advertise as much this year, which I think is something we need to do for next year's competition. But it's very much a case of, it's a work in progress. It's a lot better than it was. It's something as simple as trying to determine who's eligible for these competitions. Like, some of the rules were a bit loose. A lot of it's an honor system as well. If you apply and you say you're sci-fi, our first stop is basically going to be the blurb of your book. And if it doesn't read per se as sci-fi, we kind of have to move on to books that are more obvious just due to the sheer number of people that apply. And then we have to exclude some. There's only so many books people can read, and there's only so many reviewers, and, you know, we kind of cap it at 300, and even that's a monstrous amount of work to get through.
Definitely.
So hats off to our reviewers. I mean, that, I think they do the sheer mountain, or they do the massive amount of work in this that necessarily is in the administration part, but it's where all the gems are discovered and the time.
Yeah, goes. Huge kudos to the review teams. They did an amazing job. And my feeling about all this afterwards is, for a year, I've saw so many names that now are just like lodged in my brain, authors that I didn't recognize and hadn't heard of, and saw so many book covers several times on social media. So that, I don't know if it worked on other readers and other people, but the branding and the promotion sides worked for me, because when everyone gets on these panels now, like, I know all these names from having seen them throughout the year. And when I was first starting off, that's like all I wanted was for people to know that I'd written a book. You know, that's your first step to getting anyone to pick it up or just to read it, just to know that it's even there. And I think that's what Duncan was aiming for when he was looking for a competition for his books. It's like, how do we get recognized for having written a book? To begin with.
I think awareness for any new writer is thing to achieve.
Yes.
I mean,
I think that part of it was successful. Even like Duncan said, we didn't
definitely
do as good of a job as we could have. But, you know, when the fantasy side, Mark Lawrence is on season 8 or something of his competition. So
yeah.
We'll never catch them. But as the years accrue, I think this will all get even more powerful for the authors, is my hope.
Yeah. And I'm sure Mark went through some growing pains with the SPFBO as well. I guarantee that he did. And it's just the fact that it's like 7 years later, you know, all of these experiences come together to tell him and the people that are helping him to organize it, this is what works, this is what doesn't. They have a little bit more traction in terms of the recognition of SPFBO as like an entity. And then they can use that as sort of cachet to promote it or to get in touch with different avenues of reviewers, platforms and bloggers and all these different people that can help to boost SPFBO. And SPSFC, it's like, even after the first year, you know, I write for the blog FanFi Addict, and everyone there that was part of the reviewing process, you know, I got to see firsthand through them, secondhand, I guess, in that case, what their experience was like, all the books that they were reading, how they were approaching the reviewing process. And it is a lot of work, but these are people who are passionate about books. You guys are passionate about books. All the authors here are passionate about books. Otherwise, no one would have fucking written anything. But you're all here, which means that passion is there. And I think, you know, Duncan and Hugh, I see that passion from both of you guys. And I know year by year, it's just going to be a snowball effect of lessons learned, hurdles jumped over, all this different kind of shit that's going to improve SPSFC. And for me, it's like, it's never even a comparison between SPFBO and SPSFC, because I think you guys have the capability to take it off in your own direction and make it a really distinct and helpful thing for the
self. That's kind of why I feel a little bit sad for the finalists here today, because if I'm just looking at what we've kind of planned, what we want to improve, what we've already taken away from last year, you guys had a terrible experience compared to the people that we're going to have on this year. So thank you again for A, applying, and B, sitting through it, and C, sending us such great books.
They survived.
We're grateful
as well for coming back this year to be a judge.
Oh yeah, we're grateful. I mean, it was a really interesting experience, and we'll get to that. But don't apologize to us, because we're thrilled, you know, that you had the competition and that we got as far as we did. Very lucky there.
Yeah
absolutely.
Sure. And, you know, speaking of all of you, I'd like to ask you, you know, if you could give a quick pitch synopsis of your books, the ones that you submitted to SPSFC. And after that, we'll get into sort of why you entered into the competition in the first place, how you've been feeling about the process. But Jack, we'll start with you if you want to give a pitch.
Oh, okay. I was really hoping you'd start with someone else. That's right.
Well, you and Patrice can do a joint pitch as well.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like, Patrice might be the better one giving the pitch. She's sort of the advertising one. But but yeah, essentially, it's a pulp sci-fi adventure, Captain Wu, the Starship Nameless one. It's the first in a trilogy, and it's a group of smugglers get a package that they shouldn't have and are in a lot of trouble because they've got it, basically, at its most basic. It's set in the world of interstellar travel around the Perseus Arm, and it's a lot of running from the law and staying out of trouble type of shenanigans.
Oh, awesome. Does that work, Patrice?
Have I stayed within the company line there?
Patrice, you wanna build a little bit on what Jack's saying? You guys have the added benefit of being a writing duo, so.
I know. Well, this is exciting for me because I have never met Jack. We've talked on the phone.
Really?
I have seen a still picture of him. And I think once we tried to Zoom, but wow. So I, you know, he,
no way.
Is he real? No one knows.
Is this a deep fake? Just not a real person.
Jack is, he's an absolute genius. And he came to me because I have to put in another plug here real quick, a science fiction space opera anthology series, Beyond the Stars. And there are 8 of them out now and soon to be 9, I hope. But anyway, he submitted a short story and it was so great. And you know, you get a slush pile of people who apply and some are great and some are not. And his was just like, wow, this is wonderful, but I didn't love the ending. So I wrote back to him and I said, you know, I don't usually do this, but would you consider making the ending a little more positive? So he wrote right back to me with a fantastic ending. I said, that's great. It was different from what I suggested. And then I was about to write back to him and he wrote and he had a third ending and it was even better. And I'm like, stop. All your ideas are good. You're a writing machine. And then I said, would you write as a ghostwriter for me? And he was very humble. He said, I'd be thrilled, but could you mention my name somewhere? And I'm like, No, we have to co-write. I should, you know, certainly give him at least equal credit. So anyway, but back to Captain Wu. I'm holding it up because this is our book. I'm an actress and a singer and a performer, so don't let me talk too long. So this is Captain Wu. He described it beautifully. It's a trilogy. Here's the second one. These are the hard covers that I want to send to you, Jack signed, but it's like $200 a book to send them to Australia. So I don't know if I'm ever going to do that. I have to go and then I can see you. What was the question?
No, you answered it beautifully. And of course, you're an actress and a performer. You have a very performative presence.
What's my line?
Cool. Well, thank you so much. And Tom, I will toss it to you to pitch your book.
Ooh, my turn. Well, I am Tom Bruno, or T.A. Bruno, and I wrote In the Orbit of Sirens. I got a copy of it right here that's totally blown out on camera. Cool. Well, whatever. You've probably seen it. And in this book, it's about basically the last fragments of humanity are kind of forced out of the soul system, and they kind of have to do a last-ditch survival attempt by going to a planet they've never actually been to before. They've barely scouted it and everything. And turns out when a few of the people that get there ahead of the main group of people, there's like bacteria in the air that causes human lungs to just kind of totally die out almost immediately. And so they have problem after problem after problem. And in an attempt to solve this problem, they accidentally awaken these things called sirens, which are not really keen on having invaders in their planet. So, and therefore, then there's the book.
Love it. Very space opera vibes. And
then, yeah. And then plot happens.
And then
plot, and then plot happens. Yeah, and then it ends at some
end.
And I did continue it with two other books that weren't in the this one, but there's two more, and they're pretty. And there you go.
Your cover artwork is beautiful, but there's also illustrations on the inside of your books,
yes.
Like chapter headings and stuff that are just
right. Yeah. Beautiful. So I have the benefit of knowing some exceptional artists. Daniel Schmeling did the covers, and I found him on something called readzy.com. If anybody's like looking for cover designers or anything, they're a great source for freelancers. And then the interior artwork is done by a friend that I conned into doing this for me, named Jason Michael Hall. He's a great guy. He's like one of my favorite coworkers that I had in the past. And like, as soon as I met him, I'm like, whoa, he showed me some of his graphic comic book stuff he's done. And I'm like, I need to get him to work on something with me. And then, you know, I pitched him this idea that I'm like, you know, it'd be cool to get like part art and chapter headers or something. He's like, yeah, that'd be awesome. I've always wanted to do that. And I'm like, oh, good. You know, so you know, great guy and yeah, fantastic artist.
And now he realizes that you conned him. Poor guy.
And I conned him hardcore. Wait,
Tom, who does those 3D renders that I see you posting on Twitter? Is that
would be
your
me.
Artwork? That's really
yep,
great.
That's me.
They're really
yeah.
Good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I dabble in like almost, I work in the film industry actually, and I work for DreamWorks. And so I have like a generalist skill set when it comes to computer animation, modeling, all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, you know, like somebody's like, oh, you can do this great, you know, modeling, sculpting on just the iPad. And I'm like, really? And I pick it up. I'm like, yes, this is what I like. And so, yeah, now I'm like, just every creature in the book that's on the planet they go to. I'm just kind of modeling them as I have free time and I'm enjoying it. And it seems like people are noticing, which is really awesome.
It's a good way to help you visualize the creatures and stuff that you're writing.
Yeah, some of them I had done before I started outlining the book. Because it was just, this has been a passion project for a long, long time. Before there was a plot, there were creatures first kind of thing. Like I was world building before I had anything to do on the world. It was, you know, so I kind of went that way.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's been fun. Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, thank you. And Cameron, we'll toss it to you if you could pitch your book as well.
Yeah. Hi there. So I'm Cameron Coral and I wrote Steel Guardian. It's about a cleaner bot named Block. And he's unlucky when the AI uprising happens. Surviving humans are at war with machines. And poor Block, all he wants to do is clean and work in a hotel because that's what he was programmed to do. And so he's on the run and he discovers a human infant. And his programming makes him want to protect her and keep her safe. So he journeys across the country with her to a safe haven And along the way, he makes allies and enemies. And it's an adventure with post-apoc vibes. And readers really love Block. They call him a robot with heart. And it's a lot of fun to write the series. There's three books, and I'm working on more. So it's a blast. It's about the series. It's about believing in yourself and fighting for what's right. And yeah.
That sounds very cool. And also it has like a bit of lone wolf and cub kind of vibes with a guardian taking care of an infant that they're not fully capable of taking care of, but really, sure. really cool. Yeah. I love the idea of like, you know, writers bringing robots into this more empathetic realm. That's something that I've definitely seen a lot more of in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. And before that, it's like robots were always given short shrift as sort of like emotionless beings and that kind of thing. And even like Data from Star Trek is, you know, android, but also, you know, portrayed in such a way where it's like emotionless. But then these explorations of robots and androids and things like that of being more human than most humans is really awesome.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for robots and like grew up on like Short Circuit and it's been a blast to explore robots and what it means to be human and what that would look like in a futuristic world.
Excellent. Well, that sounds fantastic. Thank you for your pitch. And Ben, I'll toss it to you if you want to pitch your book as well.
Sure. My name's Ben Roberts, and my submission was A Star Named Vega. I would describe it as a kind of a far future utopian space adventure. It's young adult, kind of. The protagonists are teenagers, but I wrote it for everyone, you know. And it follows the story of a teenage Martian girl named Asta. Her dad gets a mysterious new job in the Vega system. And on the way, her star cruiser gets attacked by space pirates. That's where it goes from.
Awesome. I love space pirates. Well, we got a bit of a theme here. It's like Jack and Patrice thrown down with the space pirates too, Ben as well.
Some piratey vibes, yeah.
what is it about space pirates that's so appealing?
I don't know.
Pirates are cool. Sorry.
That's pirates it. Are cool. Is pirates space are cool? Is cool.
Pirates are cool. Space is cool. Let's put them together.
What two great days that go great together.
Do you know why pirates are cool?
I think when characters have a clear moral compass, they're less interesting because you know what they're going to do in every situation.
True.
And I mean, my favorite character in science fiction growing up was Han Solo because you just knew he was a good guy, but that didn't inform you on what the decision that he was going to make. So I don't know. For me, that's the appeal of these like chaotic good or chaotic neutral kind of characters. They're like much more interesting to read and write.
The moral ambiguity of these pirates and scoundrels, I think, is really
And it's not just science fiction. You look at the romance genre. Half of it's pirates on the covers. Like it's there's something universal, I think, about it. And it goes to in westerns the outlaw was the you know to horses what pirates are to boats. So I think there's something universal there. It's not just a science fiction pirate thing.
Yeah, but the important thing, Hugh, is when it's on a romance cover, they're shirtless or partially shirtless.
If they're on a science fiction cover, they should be shirtless, I think.
We need to go back to like the golden age of sci-fi with all the horribly gender inappropriate representations on covers. I hope. I'm just joking, people. Don't go back to that shit. It was terrible.
Well, cool. Hugh has now offered himself as a cover model, I think. Weren't you a cover model on one book? Maybe it's
I think it was your book. So yeah, I think you know.
No, Patrice just has a poster blown up in her bedroom of Hugh. That's it.
I've met him in person more than I've met my co-writer. So.
Well, you and Hugh got to write a book together now.
Yes.
We've talked about it. We've got one in planning, but.
Really? Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. I'm distracting you guys.
It's all good. Ganesh, let's go to you. Give us your pitch.
All right. Hi, I'm Ganesh Nair. I write as GM there. And my book was Duck and Dyer, Dicks for Hire, which was the sci-fi mystery comedy, which is a real nice niche genre that I pigeonholed myself into. But I kind of describe it a little bit like 21 Jump Street meets Everything Everywhere All at Once. So it's about two feuding friends who have kind of strained the limits of their friendship, but then they find out they've been, you know, advertised across the city as detectives, and then eventually they go, you know, into the multiverse and all that great stuff. You know how that sort of story, that old chestnut goes, and have to figure out who's telling people that they're detectives. Otherwise, the fate of everything that exists, you know, might cease to exist.
Awesome. And I remember seeing the cover on FanFi Addict when people were reviewing it. And then I just remember seeing Dicks for Hire and my mind just went to ridiculous places.
Oh, well, yes. So it's done its job. Fantastic.
Yes. Yes. That like tagline, like Dicks for Hire, that subheader was like, okay, very intrigued. I hope this is not pornographic in any sense, but let's see what this is about.
I think it both, you know, inspires some curiosity, but also sets the tone and your expectations for exactly what you're getting.
Yeah.
It's a book that very much knows what it is.
Do you do stand-up comedy at all? Because like some of your tweets are the most hilarious self-deprecating humor I've come across in such a long time. I wait for you to reply.
Oh, thank you. No, I appreciate that. I don't do stand-up. I can't be the center of attention on stage. But I used to write a lot of sketch comedy that was performed all across like New York City. So nice. A lot of my friends are stand-up comedians who've kind of left the biz, but we hang out from time to time and we write stuff together. So I do have a background in comedy.
That makes sense. I think that the title and the subtitle really catch the attention. The rhyme and the cheekiness, no pun intended,
that really works.
So it's memorable.
Yeah.
Very
yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. I tried to aim for that. A lot of my titles come first and then the story follows. So I have Duckett and Dire Dicks for Hire, and it's turned into a series. The second one is like the 100% Solution, which is a takeoff of an old Sherlock Holmes story. And the third one so far, which is probably my favorite title, is The Mystery of the Murdered Guy, which I take particular pleasure. So here's to more weird eye-catching titles.
Hell yeah. Cool. Thank you, Ganesh. And KT, we'll finish off with you if you can pitch us on your book.
Yeah, no problem. So I'm KT Belt, obviously. I wrote Monster of the Dark, which will be a 5-book series, working on book 4 now. Book 3 came out in March of this year. So Monster of the Dark is I'd say very intimate character study of a girl named Carmen from age 6 to 19, who is a clairvoyant who's more or less a being who has telekinesis, pyrokinesis, and telepathy. And it just follows her as it matures, and it's a very hopeful story, which I'll be honest, has some very dark, very brutal moments. But right now it's free everywhere, so I would say check it out.
Awesome. Cool. And for you, what was it like, 6 to 19 following this character through that many years?
Mm-hmm.
What was the decision? Like, how was it writing someone who ages over the course of the book?
Well, when deciding in that time frame, what made it interesting for me, and you could see it when you read it, is I wanted the reader to have an impression of who the character was, what she could have been if she didn't go through the experiences that she did, and what she became because she went through the experiences that she did. I don't want to give away everything with as happens in the story and the rest of the series, but it's a recurring theme of how your experiences shape and change who you are and how those experiences come because of who you are and what you are. So it's not just her, it's the people around her and how they evolve and change over the course of the story and the course of the series.
Yeah, I love that. I love a good character study, and it's really cool that you're able to explore her as she's changing and growing older and experiencing these monstrous situations. And I appreciate you all sharing your pitches with us. And all the books sound fantastic, but I would like to know, I'll start with Jack and Patrice. We'll go through again. Building on those books, why did you decide to enter them into SPSFC in the first place?
Well, you're going to have to take this one.
Well, I mean, I heard about it and I was like, that sounds great. What could it hurt? You know, we had no idea we'd get as far as we did into the finalists. And at each rung of the competition, I kind of looked around at what else was out there and I thought, this is great. It's good publicity for everybody. So mm-hmm. I guess I heard about it through Hugh and Duncan, putting the info up probably on Twitter. And this year, as you mentioned, I'm a judge, so I'm getting to see the other side of it, which is at least as fascinating. I'm really just into the very beginning of three books that are in our judging group's selection, mm-hmm. and great fun, and a whole range of things that I might not necessarily read if I were, if they weren't put in front of me as an assignment. So thanks to Duncan and to Hugh for putting it together. Wonderful idea. And it's really brought a lot of eyes, I think, to all of our books, all the way up and down the competition.
Yeah, well, building on that, what do you feel? Jack, we'll get your opinion on this as well. Competitions like SPSFC or SPFBO bring to the self-published science fiction and fantasy community?
Well, they brought me to the self-published science fiction fantasy community. I'll be honest, I didn't read a lot of self-published work in general prior to this. I wasn't really aware of just how much was out there. And obviously with like partnership with Patrice, that was just sort of starting to become aware that that was even an option. Mm. And now I have this enormous reading list of awesome stuff that I've got to check out because of this this wonderful competition. Partway through Steel Guardian at the moment. I think Vague is probably next on the list. I'm starting at the top and working my way through. But I was letting Patrice answer that first question because essentially my being aware of this competition was I got an email from her one day said, hey, we're in this competition. And that was about it.
No choice.
And my reaction was essentially, oh, that's kind of cool, but we're not going to get anywhere. So that's I won't worry about it. But yeah, and I kept hearing that we were doing well, and then I kept looking further into it and going, this is amazing. There's all this stuff there that I hadn't even considered before. But yeah, no, I if it can grab my attention like that, I mean, I know I was in the contest, but like if it can grab my attention like that and like give you this whole wide range of new books to explore and discover, then yeah, I'm hoping you can do that for a lot of other people. Because mm-hmm. yeah, that's I think there's a lot of people out there that sort of not through any sort of, dismissiveness or anything, but just forget that there is this enormous range of self-published yes. stuff out there.
100%.
Adrian, I don't want to short circuit your question, but by making the competition free and pretty much it's a no-brainer for people who have mm-hmm. a self-published work that qualify. Why did you enter it? I think it's the answer for almost anybody would be because I heard about it.
Yeah.
Almost nobody's going to hear about this and have a self-published work.
Yeah.
And not awesome. Not put it in. The community was desperate for it. So
yeah.
It doesn't cost you anything, and the only thing that can happen is some good come from it. Like someone's going to read it,
100%.
Read your book. So just to maybe we can talk about the dreams people had last night or like their favorite cuisine or something like shocking. Because why you enter this? I mean, I wanted to enter it. And I was like Duncan, disqualified.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're bringing the sass, bringing the sass.
SFF Addicts and SBFBO is literally how I've discovered two new authors. I'm not going to drop names because I've dropped their names so many times before, but I fanboy about them now. And I've gotten onto the point where I've hassled them enough on Twitter that they now send me their arcs. So,
Oh, wow.
It's a small pool of authors, but I'm like, it's something that I didn't have access to before, didn't know existed, and literally wish I lived in the same country as them because I think I'd get along really well with them as friends. But that came, of course, through the SBFBO and podcasts like this. It's opened up a new kind of world to me, and hopefully SBFC opens up a new world to other authors as well. So, yeah, it's kind of, why not? I mean, we don't charge anything. We don't make a profit from it. Authors don't have to pay anything. And at the end of the day, it's at minimum more eyes and more people talking about it, and maybe you win.
Yeah.
Well, I'm the opposite of Jack in that I mostly read self-published because I started self-publishing in 2011. And after finding, I don't want to suck up too much to Hugh because he's here. But, it was really after discovering Wool that I was like, I mean, I was already publishing myself, but I did a thriller first and other things. And I was just like, this is as good as anything you could possibly find anywhere. And there are few.
Patrice, I'll take out my earpiece if you just want to keep going on. You don't be embarrassed because I'm here.
But, you know, you don't have the restrictions because you don't have anybody saying they can say it won't sell, but you'll find out if it sells. And nobody is saying that main character is not going to be interesting to enough people, or it's too long, or it's too short, or it's too graphic, or it's not graphic enough, or whatever. So I don't want to talk too much because I already have, but it brought that kind of self-publishing brilliance to so many more people, I think, and will continue to do so.
Yeah, agreed. And it's really important for things like this to be, you know, as I've started this podcast and written for a book blog, and my horizon of what is literature has broadened so much. And, you know, like Jack, I wasn't reading that much self-published stuff. I think Wool was probably one of the few self-published books that I had read up to that point. But now I realize, like, okay, the quality is on par. The cover artwork and the design is on par, if not better, sometimes. Like, I look at Tom's book, for instance, and I look at the chapter headings and the beautiful, it's like, if you have the initiative, if you have the opportunity to, you know, obviously pay for cover artwork or work with a designer or that kind of stuff.
Or con somebody
in your case. You're lucky man.
I paid him. But, I just didn't.
but there is an entrepreneurial attitude within the self-published community that if people have the desire within them and the creative capacity in conjunction with the business capacity, there is an unbelievable amount of potential in the self-published community that I don't think people really give it its due. And I think SPSFC is one of those things that brings it to a little bit more attention, opens people's eyes a little bit more. And Tom, I'll toss it to you. Hugh just blew past that question about why you entered SPSFC, because everyone entered because you all wrote amazing books and this was a good opportunity and it's free, as Hugh said. But Tom, if you can give your sense of what these competitions bring to the self-pub community.
Well, yeah, a lot like we all said, but it also has this really, really cool trophy that I was it was just cool. I loved aside from just being in a contest, and you know, there's the self promotion, people are starting to look at your book that may have not seen it before. It was cool, like being in a pool with everybody here and everybody else that was in it too. And I bought a whole bunch of books. I have like a whole shelf over there that's got like just books I saw on this. And I'm like, I want to read these now. Mm-hmm. And I do read a pretty good amount of self-published books. So this just made my TBR explode. and so it was cool. It was that. And then like, there's so many emotions throughout the whole process. Mm-hmm. Like at first I'm like, yeah, I'll put it in. I probably won't win. And then you get past the first round. You're like, oh, okay. I did that. And I'm like, well, I got far enough. And then you get a little bit farther and you're like, oh, wait. Yeah. And then you're like, what's going to happen next? And I'm literally checking the SPSFC hashtag every morning. Like what's going on? Who reviewed my books? And then, yeah, you know, it was cool. Also, all the reviewers were awesome. You know, it was cool. The reverse effect of it was I now know a bunch of new reviewers that I did not know before.
Yeah.
And there, a lot of them are really funny. A lot of them are very, you know, detailed, and it was just, and you learn a lot about your own book through their reviews and stuff like that. So yeah, overall just 100% positive experience, you know, loved it.
Yeah. That reviewer thing is interesting because I know a lot of self-published people, the way that they get their book out there is to, you know, pitch it to reviewers and see if someone wants to have it on their blog. And I think that is really good, really meaningful to make these connections, not only with your fellow authors and fellow competitors, but also with people in different spectrums of the self-published community, whether it's the reviewers or or what have you. And to be able to just DM someone on Twitter and be like, hey, I got a new book coming out. Do you want to review it? Or do you know someone who wants to review it? Do you want to promote it in some way or help out? Is invaluable. You know, these connections are invaluable, I think.
Exactly. 100%.
I'll take that one step further. I broke into the writing business by starting as a reviewer myself. And that allowed me to form a relationship with other reviewers, but also a lot of writers that I was interviewing and reading their books. And this goes to, I think what Patrice is doing is really, really brilliant by being a reviewer this year. She's going to read stuff that she wouldn't have picked up otherwise. And that's what would happen to me for, I spent about 6 months reading and reviewing almost a book a day. And I was reading in a genre that I never read in, and it made me a better writer. I don't think I would have had the career I have had I not established those relationships. When I needed blurbs, I was reaching out to people who I had done like huge reviews and interviews about their books and helped promote their work. And so there was, I wasn't just a random person asking. I was someone who'd helped sell their books. But I think all that reading and reading as a reviewer is different. You're really deconstructing and you're trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And that was the best learning process for me as a writer. So I think it's great, all this cross-pollination. And I think for people who are listening, who are dreaming of being a writer, getting into something like this as a reviewer is the best crash course you'll ever have for becoming a professional writer.
Yeah. I mean, Hugh, it's funny that you bring that up. I didn't know that about you, which is, you know, I started SFF Addicts because I'm working on my own novel, and this was the best way that I thought I could utilize my skills in terms of like public speaking and just conversation to learn, just to learn from people, to interview authors, to do podcast panels on topics that I find interesting, and to absorb as much information and inspiration as I can from all of these really talented people. And, you know, it's like, you said that you were reaching out to people that you had interviewed or had been in touch with to get a blurb or something like that. And a lot of the time in the self-published community, authors have to reach out personally to get a blurb because the publishing company is not doing that for them. In which case, those relationships feel even more meaningful. That blurb feels more meaningful because it's on there. You talk to that person, you ask them personally, and they said yes. And all of that adds to an overall experience and an overall end product of this book that you feel even more proud of than it otherwise would have been.
It's so much better when you blackmail authors into blurbing you instead of having your publisher do it for you.
Yeah. Tom knows all about this. It's conning and blackmail all over this place.
That's the only way to write a book. No. For the record, I did pay.
I know. I'm just giving you shit, man. It's fine. I know. It's fine.
I'm worried he's going to watch this and be like, wait, you conned me?
He's going to recalibrate his whole relationship. Yeah, he's like, maybe what's going on?
We all want his number now so we can, we're friends.
You're bringing him work. It's okay. Yeah, and, exactly. Cameron, I'll toss it to you now if you want to comment on how you feel about this aspect of community and what the competitions bring to it.
Yeah, for sure. I like everyone, I think, have just been so delighted and about the reviews, and I have a deep appreciation for all the judges and all the content they read through. It's amazing. And I learned a lot about my series, my book, and got some ideas for future nice. Things. So just making friends, like some of the fantasy finalists were reviewing or reading some of the finalists' books and made some new friends that way. So it's been amazing. And I think, yeah, I really like note to self as we're talking through here, I want to apply to be a judge. Next time and go through that experience. I think that would be just eye-opening and again, growing your community. And I think that's so important for authors to do. And I really wanted that Ray Gun trophy. It's badass. So yeah, I guess.
There'll be more every year. Just keep writing books. And keep it.
Yeah, I know. I need to. I'm going to get a Ray Gun one of these years.
But I think it's good to get that flip side. It's like, as Duncan's mentioned, like as Patrice is doing herself, you know, there's going to be even more hiccups solved by SPSFC 3. So it's going to be an even smoother experience, Duncan, right? Yeah. But Cameron, I think it's good that you have that desire to want to do that, because I think it is good to, like Hugh said, have that critical eye for fiction, to deconstruct it and understand how a story works, what doesn't work, that kind of thing, and then reapply it to your own work and come out of it a better writer and a better creator.
For sure.
And Ben, what's your take on all this?
Yeah, I was trying to remember where I heard about the competition. It might have been a Daniel Green video, maybe. Does anyone else know where they heard about it from? I don't know, but I hadn't finished the book yet. I was still in the final draft when I heard about it. So, and I hadn't even really decided that I was going to self-publish yet, but it kind of became a deadline. It's like, if I'm going to self-publish, then I need to do it before this date. And as the date approached, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm definitely going to go the self-publishing route. And I think I had a week left when I kind of clicked the button for Amazon. And then it's like, oh, you need 48 hours or 5 days or whatever it is before it goes live. And I was like, oh, no, I'm going to miss it. But no, I got it in at the end. And yeah, it was, I mean, the whole experience was amazing. And like others have said, I really didn't read self-published science fiction or any self-published books before I entered the competition and before I self-published, because it happened at basically on the same day. Mm-hmm. But earlier this year, I read through when the semi-finalists were announced, I started churning through them, and that's my Kindle is basically has every single semi-finalist on it, and I'm just working my way through. And also, I've been in general just exposed to not just science fiction, but obviously the SPFBO, and there's also a really big self-published horror community on Twitter as well, and they're all kind of adjacent to each other. So yeah, I've been reading horror anthologies and short stories and things as well. So that's been pretty fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, like the cross-pollination kind of aspect that Hugh said is like that is. You know, it transcends genres, and I think the self-help community is very, it's open to embracing new voices. And I think that's something that's really cool.
Self-help rather than self-published. We may also be.
No, 100% Patrice is like, so many of the self-pub authors that I know, it's like I talk to them and they talk between each other. A lot of them edit each other's work, right. And a lot of them go through fucking therapy sessions with each other. Just like this book is like, so, you know, involving. Any book is an involving process. And I think, you know, a lot of authors who have agents or editors at publishing houses, they have sort of like that professional support group, but the self-pub community, a lot of the time they're relying on each other and they're relying on the connections made, the friends that they have.
Mm. And alcohol.
And alcohol. Come on, man.
I also find there's like a symbiotic relationship between self-pub authors and reviewers on Twitter, exactly. Especially. Yeah. There's a lot of new reviewers out there who are trying to get their foot in the door as book bloggers. And I don't know if it's predatory, but when I first published, I sought those guys out. You know, I was like trying to find people who don't, maybe I've got a smaller following, or who I think, you know, some of these reviews are pretty good. You target those guys and say, hey, do you want a free copy? Do you want a review? We can do a kind of a thing.
Well, Ben, when you use a word like target, I mean, you could call it like professional predation, but come on, man.
I did the same thing with my first book. I was finding these book bloggers, and blogs were a bigger deal back then, because now we have just a handful of silos with big social media companies. Back then, like, everyone had a Blogspot and all that, and you would find these people, and I would win like five cute kitties from some blogger, and I was like, it was a huge, you know, I was like, this is awesome. But these people are excited to get a free book and to be talking to a you know, an author, which I never felt like as I was doing this, but it's definitely, there's a symbiosis there of finding people who are on a different ladder, but the same kind of rung that you're on, because you're just cheering for each other the whole way up.
Yeah.
Okay, I have to point out, he mentioned both silo, ladder, and rung. So is this a little, you know, product placement in here, Hugh?
Shameless plug here.
Patrice.
Smart.
It comes naturally.
And Ganesh, what about you? What's your take on sort of the SPSFC sort of community and just the self-published space in general?
Right. So I published Duckett and Dyer back in 2019. I was, you know, posting on Twitter and talking to self-published authors for like the entire time since then. I became very aware of like SPFBO and the fantasy community and how kind of close and supportive all, you know, both fantasy writers and all self-published writers were sort of kind of supporting each other. And like Duncan, I realized, hey, why isn't there something for science fiction? But unlike Duncan, I'm a selfish asshole. And I was like, somebody better come along and put this together so I can enter it. I'm not
some suave South African just come around and create this competition.
So then, yeah, like, so last year my prayers were answered. Thank you very much. So I was really excited to jump into this. And at the same time, I was a reviewer for SPFB 07. So I got to go through both sides of the gauntlet at the same time. So you get, you know, sympathy for the reviewers on our part, because I know exactly how much they have to churn through and what kind of work they're putting in. So I got to know not only, you know, all these great guys here on the author side, but also got to talk to the reviewers and bribe them as well. So that was great. That whole experience was, it was really nice. And, you know, it's great to have such a supportive community, because we really do need that, because we don't have any sort of big marketing machine or anything like that behind.
Exactly. Us. Yeah. I mean, that support thing is very, very important, but Duncan, go for it.
For some reason, and this has come up so frequently on the, so we have a Discord for the SPFC authors and judges, and it's pretty active. But one of the comments that kept coming up is, why is science fiction smaller than, and then we throw out fantasy. And somebody brought up this up earlier, where horror is a big community on Twitter as well. And that's where, even though I wrote a sci-fi book, it resonated more with the horror reviewers first. And that's where I got introduced to reviewers on Twitter, et cetera. And then via that, I went to fantasy with SPFBO. And then I started looking around and also seeing, why is there no science fiction? So I think half of our goal is literally just to get it a little bit more awareness. And I mean, you can see this on Reddit as well. Fantasy is a huge subgenre on Reddit, and sci-fi is kind of siloed in a corner. And we're not certain if it's because when people are sci-fi readers, they have very specific genres that they only stick to. They only read sci-fi, only read hard, or they only read dystopian or apocalyptic. So a competition like this also, while forcing people to read outside their genre, at the same time promotes all the genres.
That's really important.
As a habitual Reddit user, I've noticed that like the fantasy community is very welcoming and very a lot more open to self-published works. But the sci-fi community, for one reason or another, is a lot more closed off. I can't tell you why, but that's just the impression I've gotten. So I don't know if that expands beyond Reddit to the wider world, the real world, but that's the impression I've gotten.
Hughes, you've done some AMAs on Reddit, haven't you?
Yeah, all in our fantasy, not our sci-fi. So that'll tell you something.
Should I just change to our SFF just to fucking eschew any ridiculousness of people, you know, pushing aside self-published fiction? I don't know. That's a weird thing.
We should do it the LGBTQ and so on plus community has done, and just like put all these genres together.
Yeah.
You know, like throw horror in there and throw a bunch of others, and like the readers don't stick to one genre as much as publishers think. That's been a lesson that I had with my writing career, is like if I was stuck with publishers, they would have had me write the same books over and over again, and I never would have found my audience. I think all this cross-pollination that's happening with social media is really a great thing for all these genres.
Yeah. And Hugh, I'll toss it back to you and Duncan, just to circle back and get a sense of like how each of you feel seeing these amazing authors, you know, making it to the finals. And then on top of that, how does the quality of stories that made their way through SPSFC make you feel about the overall state of self-pub fiction today?
Pretty confident, I think. Well, it's just lovely to see such high quality, good, well thought out work that's resonating with a lot of people, getting its time in the sun, but there's also that there's just so much of it out there. And with a competition like this as well, it's because reading is so subjective, what rises to the top is very much dependent on who the reviewers are and books they get. So there's a lot of great work that we didn't get to see. And that's also a pity because, you know, it landed with the wrong group or the wrong review, et cetera, or just wasn't their year. So I'm confident and overjoyed that there's so much quality coming through. It gives me kind of hope for my own work and hopefully gives everybody else hope for their work here that it's not a futile effort and that people recognize, you know, like you said as well, initiative and a bit of, what's the word? Oh my goodness, I've gone blank. Somebody take over for me while I try to restart my brain.
Can you get back in?
Here's something that I would say to all these finalists. I pick up books all the time just because they were nominated or shortlisted or finalists for awards. They don't have to win the award. So everyone should be updating their cover art with like a gold, you know, made up badge that says, you know, exactly what happened here, that you made it through a gauntlet and you're a finalist for a major competition with a lot of entrants. Mm-hmm. And people will pick up books because they have those stickers printed on the cover. So I wouldn't think of yourself as having narrowly missed something. Like, these are all the winners. And what I love about these competitions is that there can be, you know, 9 or 10 outright winners. Because this is, I was a finalist for several things that I didn't win, and I still promote myself as a finalist for those things. Mm-hmm. So that's one takeaway I would give. I would just congratulate each of you, not as a consolation congratulation, but as a, you know, fireworks exploding, party popper, mega, 100% congratulation. That's what you deserve in getting this far. It's what you should dream of when you enter these things, is just to be a semifinalist or a finalist. The other thing I would say, and this is more to anyone listening who's thinking about writing, there are two things that I think really helped self-publish authors back in the day. I don't know how much it still applies because, you know, a lot of us now are coasting on early success, but people who wrote in series tended to have a better chance of having some success because readers want to invest in something when they know there's like more than one book. And everyone here, you're hearing people talk about their third, their fourth, their fifth book in the series. I think that's really critical to give yourself a chance in this genre, specifically fantasy as well. The other thing, though, is not to get caught writing in that series while you're writing another book in that series. Write something else adjacent in a different genre with a different style, because the problem you can fall into with writing sequels is you're always promoting the first book, which will never be as strong as your later works. And so there's these two things you kind of have to balance in a writing career, is how do I write a series and how do I also start new things and use my new skills to give people a new entry point into my career. And they'll find your the series that you are in love with, but don't fall so in love with it that you don't give yourself a chance to discover what, you know, the amazing book that's inside of each of us that we can kind of trap ourselves from rediscovering. So those are the two things I would just point out, is like, finalists are winners, promote yourself accordingly. And if you're a writer, write to series, but don't get trapped in your series. And balancing those two is highly critical, I think, to your success.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, very good advice. Go ahead.
What I think to add to writing in a series is that a lot of readers are resistant to starting a series unless they know it's finished or close to being finished.
Yeah.
Readers are terribly hesitant to kind of invest time in a universe that isn't complete, that, you know, they want to see that the author can deliver. So yeah, don't become discouraged if your first book in a series isn't selling like hotcakes when you still have 3 or 4 planned. I mean, I think come back and reevaluate later when you've got more work out and you've got a bigger back catalog to kind of promote.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people thinking, you know, I'll write my first book in my 6-book series and it's going to go gangbusters. Like, you might have to wait a little bit. And in the meantime, network, make friends, find competitions, have patience.
Yeah, I think persistence is really big when it comes to self-publishing. And just to comment on what Hugh said, each and every one of you, update your cover artwork to include SPSFC finalists, please.
We've got some cool badges.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just use the, you can also grab a blurb from one of the reviews. I mean, now you all have someone who said something amazing you can put on the top of your book. It doesn't even, when I look at books, if it doesn't have a small italicized thing at the top and a round badge somewhere, it's not really a book yet. You know, it's like working, it's on its way to becoming a book. But like, books have those things in my mind, and it doesn't matter what they say. I just know, well, someone said something positive about it. It's subliminal. But make your book look like a book.
Definitely. And, you know, on that sort of topic of advice, I'll toss it to all of the finalists to share your hopes for the second year of SPSFC, just as something you've experienced and what you hope to see, but also at the same time, what advice you would give to future participants. So Jack, we'll start with you.
I guess the second year, I mean, I don't have any books out that aren't co-written with one of the people who's going to be judging it, so I'm not going to be entering. So
nepotism.
That's a little bit. So I don't think that would work. As far as the experiences, I mean, I'm going to be watching it very closely and like grabbing books to read off the list, definitely. As far as advice goes, I mean, realistically, I think the thing I would say to anyone who's like thinking of joining is absolutely go for it, because, you know, like you said before, it costs you nothing and you can only get good things out of it. But like the major sort of benefit was all these reviews coming in that we're talking about, like people were saying nice things, but also people were bringing up points I hadn't considered, and like using that as an opportunity to look through what you've done and look through how people are responding to it and learn from it and grow from it. So even if, I mean, even probably you can learn more from even a negative review than you can from a positive one. And so even if you don't do well, have a look at what people are saying about your book. It's an excellent opportunity to do that. I would always encourage people to go for it.
Yeah, because it's all constructive criticism. Yeah. Regardless if someone shits on you or praises you, it's all constructive. Patrice?
Well, the same that as Jack said in terms of those reviews. And as you read them as a somebody in the competition, you'll learn things about your book. And one review, and I wish I could remember the reviewer's name, for hours talked about representation, which was really interesting to us because our main character is bisexual and we have a trans person in there. It's very subtle, but as you go through the series, you learn more. So that was really useful for us. And the other thing is, it's a community. You know, you start to get to know other people who are the judges or other competitors. And, you know, we're not competitors. We're all out there to write good books, enjoy good books, and read them. We're big readers ourselves. So there's nothing to lose, as you've said, and great fun. You know, it's another little bit of encouragement as you go through wherever you end up placing, because these things are all a matter of taste. And some judges just won't happen to love your book and others will. But jump in, do it. Nothing to lose.
Yeah, that's the attitude. It's like nothing to lose. Just go for it and hope for the best, you know? Like a lot of you have just kind of entered into the competition without really having a sense of where this would go. And I think it's really
going to get bigger. So
exactly. Yeah. And Tom, what about you? What are some hopes for the future of SPSFC, as well as some advice for future participants?
Yeah, I mean, it's an excellent opportunity for sure. And kind of like what Hugh was saying, you can use all the parts of the buffalo here. Like there's little blurbs you can take from every review. There's the badges that kind of come with various points in the thing. I mean, I made a little like, you know, hype trailer afterward of just what things people said, and then like some of the stuff, and it got a lot of traction, and it definitely led to more sales and more, you know, things. So honestly, anybody looking for something like this, this is like a dream come true. So highly recommended, as everybody else said. And again, thank you, Hugh and Duncan, for, you know, doing this. It's amazing. And for future contests, I'm going to keep a close eye on them, because I'm really curious to see like just the evolution of this, and, you know, see some more excellent books. And I'm curious to see how, like, you know, we were kind of the guinea pigs but how they, you know, I'm curious to see if self-published authors see what we've done and like if it helps their work improve or do whatever, you know, in some way. That'd be awesome. Like just as a, you know, as far as that goes. But I also want to see what the next ray gun looks like, because, you know, still really jealous.
Yeah.
Keep
I've already got it. It's on my shelf.
There
I
stay go.
one year ahead. That way I always feel like I'm a winner.
Just don't,
you get to hold on to it until there's a better one.
Yeah, just don't mess up the plaque. That's it.
No, you can just put your own name on it, Hugh. Come on.
It's already on there. I just swap it out when the
he lives with it for a year and just savors it, and then he has to give it away. And
yes, very cool.
Yeah. And Cameron, what about you? What's your take?
Yeah, I was actually going to say that. So I applied on a whim and just thought, oh, I'll never hear about this again. And I had this fear that, this was just going to like validate that my book wasn't that good. So I think people out there, authors who are especially new authors, should just give it a go and get, you know, even though it's scary, to get over the fear, get over the mindset that, my book isn't good enough, or I don't deserve to be part of this, because for sure things happen. And I just feel fortunate to have been part of this and that I applied, and just putting yourself in gives you that chance to go, you know, get further down the road.
Mm-hmm. And what are your hopes for the future of the competition?
Well, I, like everyone said, I want to be following it and reading all the semifinalists and just continuing to engage with the community and watching it grow. I think it's going to just grow and continue and I want to keep doing it in the future when I have more first book in series, and yeah, just continue to support it, because I think it's really important for sci-fi writers.
Yes. Awesome. Thank you, Cameron. And Ben, what about you?
Yeah, I don't know if I have any advice. There's this really strange dynamic for a competition where you've written the book, but you don't do anything. Like for the whole year, you just sit and you just kind of wait. And it's like, oh, I made it to the next round, and or I got knocked out or whatever. It's the judges who are doing all of the work. So from that perspective, there isn't much to do other than check the SPSFC hashtag on Twitter every day. If I can give you any advice, it's try not to check it too often.
Use the website this year for any future contestants.
And the website, yes.
Yeah,
is it spsfc.org?
Yeah, it's the SPSFT.org, and it's had a nice, lovely little revamp thanks to SFF's Books Club. He's rescued it from the most amazing malware attack we had last year. So if you want a free Viagra, we're selling it. And then we've had one of the judges of Book Invasion who's done an amazing amount of work on it as well. So it's now what it should have been last year and what we wanted it to be, which is a good source for current reviews, updates, mm-hmm. news. Status of books, whether they're in or out, by judge. So yeah, it's going to be the golden source for the competition, and then kind of, you know, Twitter and YouTube, well, that will feed out from it, hopefully.
Yeah. And cool. Ben, what are some hopes for the future of the competition from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite excited about the resubmissions. And that was another thing I was going to say about advice, is don't get too disheartened if you get knocked out in an early round, because there's a lot of luck involved in the early rounds, especially. It was really cool to hear that there's this new rule in SPSFC 2 where if you got knocked out, then you can resubmit your book. And so I've seen a couple of those come up on Twitter, people who have resubmitted, and mm-hmm. yeah, it's going to be really great, because there's so many amazing books that even got knocked out in the first round. So yeah, I'm excited to see those get further this time.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. I have a couple self-pub author friends who did just that. And I think
I think I know who they are. Some of my favorite authors got knocked out really early. And it's highly subjective on which judge gets your book.
Exactly.
I mean, I try just distribute them equally or weighted according to subgenre. So each team doesn't necessarily have a pick, but they all have similar weightings of books.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, personal preference, some judges like romances and they might get all military sci-fi. I tried divvy it, but it's just random chance and luck. So yeah, our second chance at love kind of hopefully mitigates that and just gives great books that didn't get a fair shot, in one way of looking at it, another shot.
The book I submitted with a different name on it got knocked out first round.
Oh, poor you. Poor you.
I want one of these trophies, man. I want to keep one.
Just go make it yourself. You can just buy it, but you want to feel like you've earned it. That's the important.
Yeah.
The earning it that's important.
Yeah.
And I don't know. TV shows might count for something.
Get an Emmy.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to disown them if they're terrible, though. So
you said it had nothing to do with my book.
Exactly.
Never again, Apple Plus. And Ganesh, we'll finish off with you.
Yeah. So, I mean, on the advice side, I think literally it's no matter how you feel about your book, whether you're confident, of course, that's great. If you're trepidatious, enter it. Absolutely enter it. Very few times in life will you get a opportunity where you cannot lose, even if you technically lose, because you'll get to meet a lot of great people, read a lot of great books, or get introduced to a lot of great books to explode your TBR. And you know, at the very least, you'll get a lot of eyes on your book. And as any indie author knows, eyes are worth their weight in gold, not just in the black market organ sales kind of way.
I don't know what kind of shit you're dealing in, bud. And Ganesh, what are your hopes for the future of SPSFC?
Well, I'll be keeping track of it constantly. I mean, I've gotten accustomed to checking the hashtag on Twitter at least 20 times a day.
Duncan and Hugh, you've created hashtag addictions within these people. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, all the new entrants, all the, you know, second chance entrants, which is a great initiative. And I'm really looking forward to see it grow year after year, because, you know, retroactively, as big as it gets, that makes our semi-finalist status worth that much more.
Finalist, sir. Finalist.
Oh, finalist. Yeah. And semi-finalist.
Oh, yeah. But finalist.
And quarter-finalist.
And entrant. Yeah.
Entrant.
SPSFC entrant. That'll sell your book. Duncan, you were going to say something?
No, this is just a bit of a self-deprecating observation, but it is growing to the extent now, and I don't have a lot of Twitter followers, but now I'm watching the number of Twitter followers that SPSFC has versus mine. I'm like, wait, how are you doing
that? Don't worry about it, man. I do the same thing with SFF Addicts. It's like they're creeping closer. My personal one's got a little bit of a boost, but it's like, I just don't even give a shit. It's like, I host this thing. I created it. Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. So just
it's my alter ego. I get to paste some great memes, and some people don't know who it is. So it helps.
Yeah. Well, Duncan, SPSFC Swan, if you can close us out, start us off with you know, a self-published recommendation, since everything we're talking about today is self-pub. If you can offer up a recommendation,
as in a book or an author that I like.
You can say a book or an author.
Oh, goodness me. I'm going to plug him because I've been DMing him, and he's one of the guys who sent me an arc recently, and he's in SBFBO and SBFCFC again. So he's re-entered this year. Is Mike Fletcher.
Love Mike.
Yeah, your best friend. I was joking the other day that I think he's Canadian. On your payroll because he lives on your podcast.
Oh, yeah. No, I edit his podcast, and yeah. I know every dirty secret that he has.
No, if somebody deserves to blow up and have overnight success, granted, he's been working at it for a long time, but I think he deserves a follow and a read and a couple of purchases of his books, because, I mean, he writes gold, and I've got an arc that I still need to get to, which is his latest one, where he's written about insect people. I don't know how he's done it, so I'm curious. Concerning all of his past stuff has been really dark fantasy with some sci-fi. Like, he's a twisted human, but I like it.
Yeah. I mean, I love Mike because he's a fellow Canadian, so I'm a bit biased in that sense.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But hey, fuck off, Mr. South African, like reject in America. But Mike has such a humble attitude about things, but his dark sense of humor, he owns it. He's like the kind of author that really owns the style and his approach to his books. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, people are more attracted to series that are finished. He just finished up his Obsidian Path trilogy. So go check that out.
You think that, and then he leaves it completely open-ended, and then he's dropped the idea that he's writing more in the universe. I'm like, you.
Cause he's a dick like that, but you know, and Hugh, what about you? Recommendation, author or book?
I think before, I think everyone needs to go through these finalists, and anyone listening to this just needs to start through all of these amazing authors we have here and see, you know, whether you're a reader or a writer. If you're a reader, someone's done all the work for you and has filtered down some amazing books out of 300 entrants. But if you're a writer, read what reviewers loved and what worked. Don't be avant-garde. There's a reason we love stories in a certain way, because we have so much in common as humans. And so don't try to do things differently just to be different. Read what is successful and try to learn from it. Yeah. So start right here.
And at the same time, it's like, you can be different just based on your personality. It's like, if you write something that appeals to people, but at the same time is reflective of your own weirdness, and I feel like most authors are really fucking weird people, that will shine through, and then people will start to pick up on that and really appreciate it.
Yeah, you'll have your own voice, but there is a formula to what makes for a good story. Something you really learn in screenwriting. It's just the reason this could be a whole nother podcast, but I could geek out about what story is. But it's not just for entertainment. There's a lot that our brains are really tickled by, and there's a reason it works the way that it does. There's a reason the stories have been told the same way in almost every language for thousands of years. It's not a coincidence. So the more you absorb, it's like listening to music and hearing what good pitch is and what chords go together. There's a mathematics to music. It's not subjective. There's a lot of objective beauty to it. Mm-hmm. And the same is true of story. And no one has really broken that down, I think, well yet to understand it. But the only way to learn it right now is to absorb it. So here's a wonderful way to be a better storyteller, by absorbing all of these finalists and figuring out subconsciously what makes them tick and what makes them work.
Definitely. And Jack, if you could give a recommendation as well, but also let people know where they can find you on social media.
Well, I'll start with the social media because that's easier. I'm at a long, complicated Twitter handle that I don't have memorized.
I'll have it in the show notes as well, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, thank you. I am on Twitter. It's a Twitter handle that was generated by a script because I was only going to use it to do some complicated stuff with the Twitter API, but that's neither here nor there. I was never going to be using it to promote anything in the past. But yes, otherwise on Amazon with Captain Wu and the Starship Nameless and stuff. I was desperately flicking through my Kindle app then to try and figure out what I was going to recommend, because trying to work out what I've been reading recently that is self-published that I do. Like, I mean, can I recommend Steel Guardian? Because I'm about halfway through that and it is fantastic. And I would say, you know, I 100% agree. The main character is a robot that I only want good things to happen to that poor robot in the future. And I need you to promise me that that's how this is going to go down. But yeah, I'm slowly working my way through the finalists recently. And yeah, that's one of the best ones that I've read in one of the best books in general that I've read in a long time. So yeah, like I said, I haven't read a lot of self-published science fiction in the past, or self-published fiction in general. So
Cameron, don't break his heart. Don't break his heart. And Patrice, if you could give a recommendation, also let people know where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Jack, it's not often you get to talk to the author and give them advice about what to do with their characters. That's a strong position to be in. Well, I'm on Facebook, but I have almost all my 5,000 friends that I can have. And I'm on Facebook and on Twitter. I'm pretty political, and I'm not sure everybody wants to hear my political beliefs. You'll never imagine what they are in the United States these days as a science fiction writer. I won't tell you, but you can probably guess. But I actually have my website, which is my name, patricefitzgerald.com, which we sort of pulled all apart and haven't put back together, but I'm going to start putting my reviews on there. So that's a place to find me, which I promise this will be an incentive to get it done. In terms of recommendations, I'm deep in the weeds with the new competition and reading there's a small percentage you read to make sure things get into the quarterfinalist round, I think. Yeah. The first round, where we start to read the whole books. So that's really making me busy now. But I would say that I have read the beginnings of some of the finalists, these finalists here. And I too am interested in Cameron's book,
Steel Garden.
Iron Steel. Yeah, that's what I was like, I know that's not right.
If she does a prequel, it'll be on.
Okay. Oh, yeah. And the and our winner, who sadly couldn't be here, what's her first name?
Sophie.
Yeah, which is also I in the beginning of it and really enjoying it, and it's super long. So I have many irons in the fire, but those are my recommendations. Read the winners. Here. We're all winners.
Shameless. It's all good. Yeah. Tom, what about you? Social media and a recommendation.
Sure. I got all my social medias under TA Bruno. So basically anything, it's at TA Bruno author, all one word. And for my recommendations outside of the contest, and I think some of them are in the contest this time. So this is me pumping them a little bit, I think. And actually, I think you might recognize a few of these names, Adrian, because I think you interviewed them in the past. But Jonathan Navarre with his Wind Tide trilogy. Yeah, he's a great guy. That trilogy is awesome. Peter Hartog with his Bloodlines and Guardians.
Peter's my boy.
I love talking to that guy. He's such a, and the audiobooks for those books are amazing. I really love them. And then B.T. Keaton with Transference. I know he's in this year's SPSFC too. So I was really happy to see he had entered that. And that is an excellent sci-fi novel as well. Those are my outside of the, because again, I'm also starting to pick up everybody's books because they just sound so dang cool. And there's so much to see nowadays. So definitely just anything,
Good recommendations. Yeah. Peter's actually in my writing critique group. So.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. I was going to pimp his book, but you got to me.
there you go.
Yeah. And Cameron, what about you? Social media and a recommendation.
Sure. Yeah. So my website, CameronCorrell.com, has info and where you can contact me. And I'm on Instagram and Twitter as Cameron Correll author. And I'm reading Iron Truth. So I'm hooked on that in the early chapters. And then I also picked up this was a finalist, Kirsten Espinosa Rosero.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. And she's been awesome. She loved Steel Guardian and she's been awesome about mentioning it. And so I just picked up Burn Red Skies, which is a like dark fantasy with dragons. So I'm going to, I'm going through the whole list of all the authors here, but yeah, I'm excited and I'm going to be very busy this winter when it's like 20 degrees outside. So.
Just catching up on your back catalog.
Yes.
And shout out to Kirsten. She's awesome. She was on episode 16 of my podcast talking about dragons and she's a blast. Ben, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at Benjamin J Robots. It's robots, not Roberts. Roberts is my real name. It's robots on Twitter.
Just to be clarifying, robots.
It's robots. And my favorite book that I read in the competition was, it was a semi-finalist called Mazarin Blues by Al Hess. And it's kind of a slice of life, romance, slightly a little bit dystopian, kind of a murder mystery, but it's really, really well written. It's got my thumbs up, my approval on that one.
Yeah, Al is also great. I had him on the podcast for a queerness and gender panel. And his new book is coming out in the spring, and it sounds fantastic. I think it's called World Running Down. First traditionally published book. Ganesh, what about you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at Ganesh Nair, just my full name. It's just a bunch of one-liners and jokes and memes
self-deprecation.
And self-promotion. I also have a website, ds-df.com, which is more of the same, plus a lot of short stories and little articles that I write from time to time. So lots of fun there. As for a recommendation, outside of the lovely folks here and the rest of SPSFC, I really enjoyed Carmen Loop's The Audacity series. It's, if you're a Douglas Adams fan, That's basically the Hitchhiker's Guide to my Dirk Gently.
Very cool. I haven't heard of that, but that sounds great.
Yeah.
And I'll give a quick recommendation since Tom stole mine. Crystal Matar. It's fantasy, Gaslamp Fantasy, her book Legacy of the Brightwash. It's a chonky boy. It's fat and dense, but it's very beautiful. And yeah, she's a great person as well. One of those people that I met through Twitter and just doing this podcast and everything. And, you know, very thankful to have become friends with. And Duncan, if you can let people know where they can find you on social media, but also SPSFC.
Yes, SPSFC. It's just the SPSFC.org. At the SPFCFC for Twitter. And then my own is just a very interesting Duncan_Swan.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you all for joining me today. Hugh had to step out and KT disappeared a little bit earlier on. But to all of you, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate you taking the time. And it was great to talk about SPSFC as well as your work. Hopefully, you know, promote it and promote the competition and just get people's eyes on some new stuff, some very deserving self-published fiction. Yeah, thank you all again, and hope to see you again sometime.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Adrian. Thanks, Duncan. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Have it. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Duncan, Hugh, and the SPSFC finalists. If you like this episode, please subscribe, rate and review us on your favorite podcast app, and share us with your friends. It helps a lot and we greatly appreciate it. You can also follow SFF Addicts on Twitter or Instagram at SFF Addicts Pod for updates and more. And you can follow me, Adrian M. Gibson, on Twitter or Instagram at Adrian M. Gibson. As well, don't forget to subscribe to the FanFi Addict YouTube channel, where this and every other author chat is available in full video. SFF Addicts is part of FanFiAddict.com, so make sure to check us out there for the latest in book reviews, essays, and all things sci-fi and fantasy, as well as the full episode archive for the podcast. All music comes courtesy of the talented Astronauts. Check them out on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/STRONOZ. All links for the episode are also available in the show notes. Now, keep reading, keep imagining, and we'll see you next time on SFF Addicts.